Lord, open our ears to hear your word. Open our hearts to receive that word into our lives. Amen. Whenever I read that story of the healing of Naaman and Elisha, I find myself thinking that really it needs to be an animated cartoon or part of a pantomime sort of plot. The characters are wonderful. There are three powerful men, two kings of Aram and Israel, and a general of Aram. There are various people without names, a servant girl, more servants, the general's wife, and then in the middle, not quite sure, is he powerful, not powerful, but a rather cantankerous prophet, Elisha. They all have their parts to play, but I can just kind of see, you know, them arguing back and forth, or almost not quite a he's behind you, but that kind of atmosphere almost as we read it. It starts, of course, with the powerful men. Naaman, the general of a king. But the problem is, however powerful he is, he has developed leprosy. And he is ready to grasp at any cure, even to the point when a young girl, a prisoner of war, taken a prisoner in his campaigns, brought back to be a servant in his house, whispers to his wife, who passes the message on, that in her country there is a prophet who can heal people. Probably quite a straw to grasp at if that country has just been defeated by Naaman and his army. And quite a generous suggestion from a girl who is a prisoner. Is it pride in the prophet that leads to that? Or is it that she genuinely has compassion on this man? We don't know. So Naaman goes to his king and says, well, actually, I want to go to Israel, but not to fight, but to see a prophet. The king of Israel values his general, so we get into power mode. He writes a letter to the king of Israel and says, I gather that in your country you can cure this man of leprosy. Please do so. Early diplomacy, power, you get what you want. But of course, when the king of Israel opens the letter, I can't do that. This letter is a reason to invade. How can anyone cure leprosy? So that is what the powerful men and power games produce. But Elisha hears of this. Elisha takes pity either on his king or on Naaman or the two of them and says, well, just send him to me. He went to the wrong person. Send him to me. And we imagine Naaman came with chariots and bags of gold and silver and fine clothes, and so this procession moves off to Elisha's house. But by now we've got to the point in the story where the power of kings and armies doesn't work. And Elisha, who either wants to make a point or has his own pride or a bit of each, doesn't even come out to greet his visitor. He sends his servant out with a message, go and wash in the River Jordan 7 times. It's probably not surprising that the response of Naaman, the rich and powerful general, is that this is not what he expects of a real healer. Real healers will come out and see him and speak to him and wave their hands around and speak some incantations or do something spectacular. And Naaman, why do I have to come this way to wash in a grotty little river like this when I've got wonderful rivers in my own country? Will his pride prevent healing? But I think this is where we see another glimpse of Naaman as a man as well as a leader. Someone whose servants did respect him and who possibly even cared about him. rather like the slave girl who speaks to his wife. They want to persuade him to do what Elisha told him. They want to see Naaman healed. Look, if he told you to do something difficult, you'd have done it. So why not do something simple and straightforward? What have you got to lose? It's a simple question, and it persuades Naaman. I think it might be worth us remembering that question too, because much of our calling to follow God is about putting aside pride and doing and being who we are called to be in the ordinary acts and details of our lives, however mundane they may seem. God is in the overlooked people and actions as much and often more than those who get publicity. Think of some of the conversations, possibly significant ones that mattered to us, that happen over washing up, clearing things up, meeting someone in the street. Those everyday actions where God's Spirit finds space to come. So, Naaman does wash in the Jordan, and he is healed. And his response is immediately one of thanksgiving, to return to Elisha, offer payment and riches, but also publicly give up his belief in his pagan gods and acknowledge the God whom Elisha follows as the true God. Elisha rejects the riches and the payment. You can read on in the story to find out what happened to his servant who didn't want to. But Elisha doesn't heal for personal gain, but he does affirm Naaman's faith in the one God and the thanks he gave to God for his healing. So here in the history of the kingdoms of Israel and Judea, we have a story where it is a foreigner who responds to God's healing and power by offering his thanks and worship as a response to the gift given to him of cleansing and health. The gospel story has a similar pattern. 10 men are healed by Jesus from leprosy, but only one of the 10, discovering they've all been healed as they go to the priest who has to declare them clean, immediately starts praising God, giving thanks, and turns around straight away to give thanks to Jesus. The response of thanks, recognizing God in their lives, or this particular man's life, and thanking God. And Luke then tells us that this one, the one who returned, the one who gives thanks, the one who acknowledges the power of God and acknowledges the role of Jesus, is a Samaritan. Luke describes him, that foreigner. As in the story of Naaman, it's someone who isn't one of the chosen people, as the Jews thought of themselves, who has the insight to recognize that God has given that gift of healing to them. And not just a gift of being cured, but of being made whole, of being able to return to their communities instead of being outcasts. The gift of salvation. It has been pointed out that as the Samaritan wasn't a Jew, he didn't need to go to the Jewish priest to be pronounced clean, and maybe they wouldn't have wanted to. But this also emphasizes that it was an outsider who recognized God at work in his life. That message of salvation for all, but we need to respond and accept the offer of healing, wholeness, and salvation. So these are both stories which demonstrate that God's salvation is offered to those who are often beyond the boundaries that we have created. But the stories, particularly the Old Testament, also show that the people who bring those who need healing, who bring them to healing, are also unexpected people, overlooked people, who may themselves be broken or wounded or in difficult places on the edges, like a slave girl, a prisoner of war. Because Naaman learns of the healing gifts of Elisha through this girl taken captive, a child, a servant, a prisoner of war in his home. She passes this on to a woman, his wife, but not named, And then Elisha. He has a power, but it's not sort of the rich, it's not the power of armies or kings. Because he has no incantations or potions. And then it's Naaman's servants also, depending on him for their power depends on him. They are also nameless, they're just servants. But they are the ones who persuade him to follow the instructions of Elisha. And it's the Samaritan, the outsider, who recognizes God in Jesus. People on the margins, people so easily overlooked, who are those whom God uses to bring healing and salvation. And I was reminded of this on Thursday evening at the service to celebrate Father Paul's 25 years of ordained ministry, and some of you may have been there. It was a lovely service. But the preacher was a long-standing friend, known him since he was ordained. And he reminded us of the number of times that Father Paul had to cope with people saying or implying that it wasn't really possible to be a priest who leads worship from a wheelchair. It wasn't really possible to do the job if you don't have the proper full use of your legs. Yet Paul's ministry of companionship, often through conversations with all sorts of people from his chair, is what many will remember. Often it is our apparent weaknesses, whether temporary or lifelong, which are the places from which we offer ministry and care to others. And then last week, I was beginning to think about these stories of Naaman and the lepers, where healing came from simple actions undertaken in faith and trust, like washing in the Jordan or simply walking to the priest to be declared clean, when I heard of the nomination of our new Archbishop. One of the parts of her introductory talk seemed to link with this and spoke, I thought, very powerfully, was when she said, "Washing feet has shaped my Christian vocation as a nurse, then a priest, then a bishop. In the apparent chaos which surrounds us, in the midst of such profound global uncertainty, the possibility of healing lies in acts of kindness and love." And I hope that this community is, and is continuing to become, a place where acts of kindness and love are offered to all who need to receive such kindness and love, and where God is able to use our weaknesses and our gifts as a means of bringing healing and salvation to anyone who needs to receive God's love. Amen.